Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace. And Angie is here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. My son needed a major yard cleanup at his new home. We went straight to the Angie website and found a bunch of local, reliable, and affordable pros to handle the job, and one did pronto. Angie can help you find the best price for your project. Angie lets you request and compare quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps, or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides that tell you what others have paid for similar projects, both nationally and in your area. Get started at Angie.com. That's ANGI.com, or download the app today. The app and website are free to use. Hello, ladies. Hello, gentlemen. This is the Victor Davis Hanson Show. I am Jack Fowler, but you are here to listen to Victor Davis Hanson. He is the star, the namesake. He is the Martin and Ely Anderson Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution and the Wayne and Marsha Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. He's got a website, The Blade of Perseus. Its address is victorhanson.com. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that later. In this episode, we are recording on Friday, the 3rd of May. This particular episode is out on the 7th of May. And there's so much to talk about. This has been quite a week for America, the week just passed. And Victor, we'll begin by talking about UCLA, which looks like a garbage dump. And we'll get to that and plenty more topics right after these important messages.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor, I mentioned that this particular episode will be out on Tuesday, May 7th. Victor, do you know what's happening on Tuesday, May 7th?
Yes, I do. My book is coming out. The End of Everything, How Wars Descend into Annihilation. I did Mark Levin, so he's going to be out. We're broadcasting on a Friday, so it'll be on Saturday night.
Oh, well, so people
would have already seen it, I hope. Mark did a really good, he was very friendly, and he did a really good job, I thought, interviewing me. And I'm going to be on Fox twice, Monday and Tuesday nights.
And you and Sammy are going to have a multiple part discussions of the book.
I have to take a large group to Normandy on May 23rd to June 5th. So what we're recording each chapter of the book, a whole hour on the Alexander the Great's destruction of Thebes, the tragic destruction of Carthage and the Third Punic War. And then the most moving was for me to write was the last Black Tuesday, May 29th, 1453, the end of Constantinople, Christendom in Asia. And then we're going to do Tenochtitlan. That's kind of a creepy chapter. It's when you see the conquistadors or what are all paraded up that were captured onto the Great Pyramid, right, stripped down, painted, had their hearts torn out, and then cannibalized. But we're talking about the destruction of Tenochtitlan, ancient Aztec Mexico City.
Wow. Well, we're all looking forward to that. And now we're looking forward to your views, Victor, on some of the madness we've just been through. Let's start at UCLA, out your way, California. Real hardcore madness, not only in the final hours of the the encampment as the police in Los Angeles broke it up. And it took them a while to do it, not because of what the cops wanted to do, but because of the leadership of the city. And it was also a scene of much taunting and bullying and beating up of Jewish students, preventing them from going to their classes. But Victor, after the punks had been cleared out, it looked like a garbage dump. Your thoughts?
Well, the subtext that everybody's missing is that these students are all on some type of support, whether they're parental support, or us, the taxpayers, student subsidized loans, or the university support. And they live in a la-la land. So we had that one student at Columbia that was had that crazy PhD thesis on the intersectionality of gender and Marxist this and that. And then she's out there demanding that they give her food while they destroy the classics department at Columbia. And here at UCLA, those video images of what those people did to that campus, it was just shocking. I mean, there was garbage everywhere. They destroyed things. They threw trash. And who did they think was going to pick up after them? It's going to be poor people who work in maintenance and janitorial services, mostly minorities that they champion. So they're completely selfish little brats. And then the people who are trying to get them off and enforce the law are middle-class cops. We got that one, you saw that one, was that from Portland where that guy ran at full speed with his little shield and he surprised a policeman? He ran top speed and then he bounced off and it didn't even dent the policeman, and then they picked him up. And then the other person ran to help him to assault an officer, and then he saw that the officer easily, you know, this spaghetti-armed Antifa-type kid. And then he put his hands up like, no, I don't want any part of this. So there was, you know, as I'm speaking today, the reports are that Gascon is going to let all of these people out who committed violence at UCLA, who tried to beat up Jewish students. And it's really a class thing. They don't care about the maintenance people that take care of them and clean up after them when they're at universities. And when they trash the yard, they don't care about. They don't care about the middle-class police. They're the most spoiled generation you can imagine. And I think people, coupled with this news report, Jack, that the Biden administration, Corinne Jean-Pierre didn't deny it, is thinking of bringing in thousands of Gazans. And we're going to get more of this if they do. I think that's going to destroy Joe Biden's chances for the election, because we were all hearing about the Biden bump, but he's 10 points down in a CNN poll. And I think it's mostly sort of like 1968 when Nixon was running behind Humphrey. And after that 68 convention, everybody said, you know what, I'm not going to vote for these people. And the same thing with Reagan in 66 when he ran for governor. They elected him. And who wants to vote for who would want any of that? And Joe Biden just is incapable, as is everybody in the Democratic Party, to say that this is radical Islamic, pro-Hamas, Marxist violence, anti-Semitic. They keep saying, well, on the one hand, we condemn anti-Semitism. On the other hand, Islamophobia. Will somebody please tell me if they've seen one incidence of Islamophobia? That's just a red herring. So I think it reflects really poorly on the, and then the president and all these blue state, anywhere there's a president in a blue state, blue city, you know that he's a leftist, you know that he got to where he is, by appeasing or being a leftist. The faculty are leftists. The protesters are all leftists. The mayors are leftists. The city councils are leftists. And the governor's leftists. And so they condone and they promote this. Anywhere there's a red state university with a mayor and city council and governor, the conservative, even if the president, who probably is left-wing, and the faculty, they can't do anything. There's order and calm. This is really a referendum on the failures of this whole progressive touch that turns everything to dross. Everything they touch, they destroy. The border, jurisprudence, energy, foreign policy. It's a Marxist party now, and it doesn't work. And they get violent and angry, and they're not nice people.
Victor, I saw somebody commenting on a meltdown at MSNBC the other day. So the other day is Thursday, when in real time, we're seeing the dismantling of these Jacobins at UCLA and the realization of the talking heads that this is going to have a political ramifications. And somebody made a comment that this violence is going to, you know, quote unquote, help Trump. Now, how come the violence of 2020 did not help Donald Trump? Would you address that?
Well, as a generic rule, and Joe Biden, remember, demagogued the issue. He says Trump is in charge when the violence, he owns it. So, of course, that boomeranged back on him. But as a general rule, anytime there's violence and people get sick of it, they blame the incumbent president. That's number one. Number two, the media covered that violence of 2020, which was 120 days, as I keep saying, 35 people were killed, 1,500 police officers plus were injured, $2 billion went up in smoke, and they attacked federal courthouse, police precincts, iconic churches. They tried to get at Trump. And 14,000 arrests, most of them were let go. But the media said it was largely peaceful, or it was a summer of love, or Donald Trump wanted to send in the National Guard. So it was very hard for him. He would have been much better just to ignore everything and send in the National Guard and restore calm. But he couldn't do that, he thought, because the election was coming up. Remember, Kamala Harris said, this is not going to stop. This is going to continue, nor should it stop. It's going to go all the way to the election. Molly Ball, on that infamous Time essay of February 2021, said, this was how we won. We had a cabal. We modulated the protest so they would continue all the way to the election. So it was very hard for Trump when the media and the Democratic Party was hand in glove orchestrating this. But now they've created a Frankensteinian monster. They never thought it would apply to them. They thought if there were protests, they would be against supposed conservative right-wingers. But they're not, because these people are crazy. These are pro-Hamas, Marxist, radical Islamicists, and a bunch of useful idiot, spoiled kids. And now all of a sudden, it's Genocide Joe. And he can't control it. And he could win if he would restore order, but then he's afraid that the Muslim community wouldn't vote for him. I don't know who they're going to vote for. Who do they think they're going to vote for? Robert Kennedy, maybe. Donald Trump? I don't think so. But the point is that now the youth vote, Jack, people under 30, Trump is ahead in that cohort, because these people aren't the majority of the youth vote. A lot of people are sick of all this, especially young people. 60% of the young people now don't go to college. Right. And when they see this student loan giveaway, they're not empathetic for some spoiled brat, PhD, art history major that gets, you know, $80,000 forgiven when they get nothing and they have to pay for it when their payroll taxes and regular income tax withholding.
Victor, I'm interested in getting your thoughts on the eating your own, which we've seen in some of these negotiations on the college campuses. And let's get your thoughts on that right after these important messages.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show again. We're recording on Friday, the 3rd of May. This particular episode is out on book publication day for Victor. The End of Everything comes out on May 7th, Tuesday, May 7th. Victor, I saw a negotiation, I think it was from SUNY New Paltz, and the wimpiest college president in history, who's is arguing with those of his own kind of ideological ilk. And it was so, I mean, as a man, I was so embarrassed for this wimp. But how can they have it both ways, Victor? How can they be on a level where someone in charge of a public institution talks to them like they're equals, but yet, as we saw the mantra coming out from MSNBC on Thursday, they're children, or the mayor of New York, we have to protect the children, and they're being, you know, the provocateurs in the crowd. What are they? Are they babies, or are they?
I think the problem is, Jack, that there's children talking to children. Just because these people have adult bodies, the faculty and these administrators, doesn't mean they're adults. They went right to graduate school. They went to undergraduate. They didn't drive a taxi. They didn't go get on a tractor. They didn't drive a semi. They didn't have a summer job, hauling trash for somebody. They went right to graduate school. And then when they went to graduate school, they went right to faculty. And they got automatic lifetime tenure after a measly 5 or 6 years. And then they went into administration. So when you see these college presidents and provosts and deans and faculty talking to the students, it's like your kids talking to another kid, but one of them has an adult body. But that doesn't mean they're adults. They're all prolonged adolescent because they've never been in the real world. And all you have to do, we're subsidizing all of this. We, the taxpayers. So that young woman who was basically saying, you're going to deliver food for me as I destroy Hamilton Hall at Columbia, we're subsidizing these loans. We're giving that $8 billion endowment income on $8 billion of an endowment, tax-free status. We're sending millions of dollars without conditions and stock, and people give stock to them for tax purposes. And we don't have to do that. And the funny thing is, there's 500,000 fewer births per year than there was 20 years ago. Fertility has gone in 2000 from 2.1 to 1.65. And there's thousands of fewer. One college, a private college, closes a week in the United States. So there's fewer students. Costs have gone up way above the rate of inflation. And the teaching loads have gone down. The Club Med environment has increased, where you get latte bars and rock climbing, and the dorms look like they're, you know, penthouses. And the result, it doesn't pencil out. So one of the ways they square the circle is they get 1 million foreign students and they charge them top, you know, plus. They don't get any discount. And then these students come over here, if they're Chinese, they're all from illiberal and Middle East, they're all from illiberal regimes. And they don't appreciate the liberality and affluence and leisure of the United States. They look at it as decadence and they take advantage of it. And the whole paradigm, when they interview these students, Jack, and they ask them, river to the sea, which river, which sea? They have no idea what the Jordan River is. So even the Middle Eastern students can't answer that. They ask them why they were there. I don't know why I'm here. They ask them, what do you mean by 1947? I don't know. What do you mean by global intifada? I don't know. They don't know anything because the faculty has watered down the curriculum because for the last 3 to 4 years, they let in people with no SAT score and no adjudication of their GPA. And, you know, in Stanford, they let in a guy who wrote Black Lives Matter 100 times. And then they had an article in the San Jose Mercury bragging that Stanford did that almost 70% of those who chose to take an optional SAT and got a perfect score, they rejected. So they're in learning land. And the only good thing about this is not all the universities are. So there's an enormous opportunity for the University of Tennessee's, the Vanderbilts, the Caltechs, if they want, some of the UC campuses, if they wanted, Cal State Fresno, where I taught, if they wanted to, they could step up and say, we have standards and come over here. If you're right. Jewish and you're going to be attacked on campus, come down to the University of Alabama. Alabama is a much more liberal, tolerant place than New York City or Chicago or Minneapolis or Boston. Isn't that ironic to say? It is. And we'll protect you. And so I think this whole paradigm is blowing up, especially post-COVID, when the argument that, well, you need a general education. Well, you can get that at community college for 2 years. But let's say you want to get a general education. You're not going to get it at Stanford. You're not going to get it at Harvard. You're not going to get it at Princeton. Go look at the GE. It's all the gender of this and the race of that and the ethnicity of this and the intersectionality of those and the post-colonial. It's all propaganda. You'd be much better just going on, you know, going out and being an electrician and making $100,000 a year in demand, or a welder, and at night going online, get a Hillsdale class, go to night school on the internet. The teaching is better, and
right.
I think that's what's happening to these universities. They don't know what they're doing. They've gone full Bud Light. They've gone full Target. They've gone full Disney. They've gone full. They're like CDs when everybody else is downloading their CDs. They are CNN. And that's when I wrote that column that everything the left touches, it destroys. And now, you know, you mentioned Frankensteinian monsters devouring the doctors that created them. Adam Schiff. We talked about that. His suit was stolen. The mayor of Los Angeles, her home was broken. And we know the Pelosi's. So that liberal ideology of permissiveness and appeasement, it doesn't even protect its architects. And these college presidents thought, wow, you know, I'm a man of the left. And you could see that with that Chairman Iske at the UC Law Dean. I follow that guy's career. He's a very left-wing guy. He was at UC Irvine. He comes to what once was Bolt Hall before they changed the name, and they've never recaptured the prestige once they did it. And he thought he was going to have all the students periodically come to his house for dinner, and they did, and they hijacked his dinner, and they grabbed the microphone and wrestled with his wife and then spouted this horrific pro-Hamas anti-Semitic. And they had posters of him. And he looked like an IDF vampire with fangs. And he was, you know, they were calling him genocidal. And the only reason I know about him, he went kind of viral on the internet when he was teaching a class that somebody filmed where he said, you know, technically in California, it's against the law on 209. To use race as a criterion for hiring and promotion and tenure, but you can do it. And here's how. You just do it. You just deny you're doing it, but you just do it. You wink and nod. And then he was saying during the George Floyd riot, you know, we need more protest. Well, he got him, didn't he? He got him right in his house. And now he's shot. He's like gambling in Casablanca.
That's funny. Hey, you know what's not funny but it's delicious? Barbecue. Just hearing that word makes your mouth water. You may already have a low temperature, slow cooking smoke or egg or pellet barbecue, but in the middle of your busy week, fair and dear listener, who has that kind of time? You need a hot, fast solar infrared gas grill. It heats up to 1,000 degrees in just 3 minutes, even on cold winter nights. That heat locks in juices and flavor and grills food faster. It's in just a few minutes. Your family will be sitting at the table enjoying delicious, better than restaurant quality grilled food, juicy steaks, moist chicken, tender fish, and healthy grilled veggies. Solaire is a multi-generational veteran-owned business. Their portables, carts, and built-ins are all made in the USA from commercial-grade stainless steel, so they're built to last. Get your free guide, How to Choose the Right Infrared Grill at besthotgrill.com. That's besthotgrill.com. Solaire infrared gas grills for fast, delicious grilled food every day. That's besthotgrill.com, besthotgrill.com. And we thank Solaire for sponsoring the Victor Davis Hanson Show. And I bet those kids at Columbia wish they had a Solaire grill to cook some delicious food while they were protesting the poor, starving things. Hey, Victor, I was at, I think it was Tuesday, I was in Washington and I had a meeting at Catholic University. Did you know I'm Catholic, don't you, Victor?
I had that. I wasn't sure, but I had a suspicion you were. I even thought you might be a Catholic monarch.
No, because that might mean the Pope would be king. He wouldn't want that. But anyway, Catholic University is a big school and it's actually has some very good departments and is growing in prestige. And there was just nothing happening on campus to your point before. There
I
are
think
good alternatives there.
Notre Dame is free of it, isn't it?
I believe so. Yeah.
How about your alma mater?
Holy Cross. I don't know.
Yes.
Everyone's still in awe of the Fauci building there, I guess.
I know that St. Thomas Aquinas, I spoke there. It's a wonderful place. It's down in Southern California between, Magic Mountain and Ventura. It's a really beautiful campus. The students are wonderful. There's nothing like that at University of Dallas. There's nothing like that at Hillsdale. There's a lot of places you can go to. I think there's a whole change of mindset. I really do. I think the parents that are listening to this, one of the most frequent emails or text messages or comes to the website in inquiries or where should I send my kids? And I really think now, if you think that you're going to get a Cattle Brand Prestige Yale Stanford degree, and it's going to be like it was 10 years, 20 years ago, and your kid is going to be on a trajectory to be famous or influential or wealthy, whatever, you're sorely mistaken. That child is going to come home the first semester and you're not going to recognize him or her. If your child is Jewish, she's going to encounter pure hatred, and there's not anybody who's going to stop it. They are going to come home as a complete Marxist, and they're going to resent you. And they're not going to know anything. They really aren't. They're going to be propagandized. In fact, they're going to have a lot of leisure time because there's so many special admits, DI admits, that they can't have. It's impossible. It's impossible. When you have 50, 60% of the people are admitted who otherwise would not if they had sent in their SAT scores, it's impossible to have standards. They cannot learn anything. And so you'd be much better sending their child to a conservative liberal arts campus, and they're going to have more prestige. They really are. And no employer would want to hire these people. Can you imagine hiring that graduate student at Columbia? So, what was her name? Skouski, or she would just go to human resources the first day on the job and say, "Here are my demands." And then
Well, Victor,
you'd give her a task, and she'd say, "Well, my PhD is on intersectionality of gender transformation." And you said, "No, I want you to research this company and find out its profit more." Oh, I can't. I don't believe in companies. Why would you want those people? when there's so many good people in the United States that are so eager. Another thing that I'm really changing my view when I wrote Mexifornia, which was a criticism of illegal immigration. I thought it was pretty prescient. Never in my right mind did I think 10 million people would cross the border with impunity. But I was championing,
what year did it come out, Victor? Just
2002. And then Roger Kimball published another paperback in 2021. But I supported legal immigration as long as it was diverse, legal, meritocratic, and came from all over the world. I'm not sure that we can handle a million legal immigrants. A lot of these people are legal immigrants. I don't think that we're capable of assimilating and integrating as hosts. We don't have civic education. Our educational system, it's not just the universities, it's K through 12. They don't teach people to assimilate. They allow this tribalism. We're at a historic high right now, Jack. 55 million people were not born in the United States. 27% of California's resident population. Highest percentage ever. And guess what? We're not integrating them. We have 10 million, and these are people who are U.S. citizens, legal green card holders, student visa, and illegal 20 to 25 million illegal aliens. And it's completely uncontrolled. And they don't like the United States in many cases. We saw in Dearborn that death to America and Khomeini and death to Israel chanting. We see all these Middle Eastern people here. They do not like us at all. They fight with our own police. They trash our own institutions. Why do we think that because they come here legally that we would want them? You know, and why would we want people from Gaza to come here? We want people to come here that like us, that don't and want to help us. We're $35 trillion. We don't want people to come here and say, okay, I'm here and I want housing like these immigrants, the 10 million. I want my housing subsidy, my phone subsidy, my food subsidy, my legal subsidy, and my health subsidy or else. And by the way, I'm oppressed. I set one foot across the border and I became a victim. And you were my victim. We don't need that. And then the other day you saw or heard that Biden, he attacked our allies. He attacked India and Japan and said they were xenophobic. Maybe they are, but you don't do that publicly. We're going to lose India. They don't like Biden. They're starting to flirt around with this new China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran axis. They're buying gobs of Russian oil, and yet he insults them. And he says that Russia, China are xenophobic. Well, okay. Japan has very tough immigration laws. So does India. And let me ask you something. Are their campuses in turmoil right now? Do they have 50 million people? They have no idea who they are. Are they lining up to say, you know what, United States, you're not going to get those Gazans. We want them. Nobody in the Arab world wants to take in people from Gaza. Right. So, and you know what Biden is doing before the election? He's trying to cut a deal where Israel backs off, Hamas gives the few hostages that haven't been killed, and then he steps in and says, you can all come to the United States. And they'll say, we hate the United States, but we want to come there. And all these, that was the big disconnect when you watch these Middle Eastern students, death to America, you know, burn the flag, raise the pallet, but everything, but I hate you so much, I want to go home. I hate you so much, I want to stay here and hate you more. It doesn't make any sense. So I've come full circle. Mark Kerkorian wrote a really good book questioning the wisdom of massive legal immigration. I thought it was a little over the top. It wasn't. It was prescient. I was wrong. I don't think we can handle more than 200,000, 250,000 legal immigrants at the most. And that would be if they were from all over the United States. And this is the legacy of Ted Kennedy on steroids during the Obama administration, this open border and everybody gets to come. I think if we just said it's going to be meritocratic and it's racially blind and ethnically blind, we would get millions of Europeans that would want to come with bachelor's degrees and skills, and we discriminate against them.
Victor, you mentioned Mark, and I talked to Mark a few weeks ago, and folks, he runs the Center for Immigration Studies, and he might be a good guest to have a conversation with you on one of these podcasts, because of course he and his organization condemn illegal immigration, but he does get a lot of pushback for his opposition to legal immigration. And I think some of it is class oriented, because some people do want their nannies and gardeners, etc. But it's a very complex issue when you get to the legal side, and he's really smart about that. I'm glad you mentioned him.
Yeah, I've always liked Mark. He has ties to the Armenian community in Fresno, and he's come out and visited me on my farm. I like him a lot. So something is wrong with the whole immigration. And when Biden said we're a nation of immigrants, we're not a nation of illegal immigrants. And we're a nation, anytime we've had massive influxes without audit, we've had real challenges. We need to get back to about 250,000 at most legal immigrants that have lengthy background checks. They come here and they can support themselves. We don't just take 80% of the people from Asia and Latin America. They can come all over the world, and we discriminate against people from the Anglo-speaking. We should let in more Canadians, more British, more Australians, more Europeans. Not that we're going to privilege them, just we're not going to discriminate against them. And we should tell people, if you have advanced degrees, engineering, or you have skills in the trades, we want you. But we don't, we just can't, at this point, the oppressor, oppressed, victim, victimizer, Marxist binary that we hold out in lieu of civic education to these immigrants, they lap it up. I've seen it. You know, I'm kind of in an excitable mood, because last night I did my annual walk around my 40 acres, and, you know, I saw another person drive out, and they threw another washer, and they just tossed it off the pickup, and it just shattered. I mean, the inside shattered, and it's all over the road. It's into the orchard, and there's all of these refrigerators and stuff and trash, and then they took off. And I just think, what is the mentality of that? And I go and look at the garbage bags that are around there, and there's evidence that the person is Spanish speaking because of the literature and the name. And I'm thinking, and I know Mexican American people, and they're no different than anybody else. They don't do that. So these are people coming across the border, and they rent compounds out in the country, and they don't have garbage services. They just pack it up and they throw it on the side of the road, or they drive in and they think somebody's going to clean up after them, and they expect them to. And when you confront them, they get angry at you. I don't like that attitude. I really don't.
Right.
I don't think
you do have to clean up after them.
I do.
If you don't, it becomes, you know, garbage trash garbage.
Yeah, the word gets out. It becomes Mount Trashmore, as we call it. Everybody here, hey, go out to that Mountain View house. Shouldn't even get my address. Go out to that farm out there and throw trash. And we've had a lot of, we've had a farmer about 8 years ago who caught people stripping a car, and he held them at gunpoint, and one of them snuck around, shot him in the head, and killed him. And so there, a lot of them are armed. So yeah. This is just an elite project, is what I'm trying to say. When Joe Biden said our strength, he said that illegal immigrants built America. That's not true. It's not true. And then he said to China and India, we have a better economy because we have immigrants. I don't know if that's true or not. We have some really talented immigrants. And I support limited legal immigration of 250,000. That's more than most countries take, more than anybody. But I don't support 1 million people coming in here with no center. I mean, I don't want to be, I live a mile from one of the biggest Sikh religious temples. We have a huge Sikh community. They're very industrious as a community. But I know a member of it, and I just said to him once, why don't you start flying above your Sikh flag? Why don't you supply the American flag? Just why don't you do it? It would be nice to do that. He said they would. I haven't checked lately. But I think if each group, and there, I went to a little valley town, and it said Oaxaca Market. And okay, fine. You know, and then another one said Mexican Market. What if you had a market that said Anglo Market? Would anybody get angry? I don't know. But I had Jeremy Carl on this podcast. He's very erudite. He's scholarly. But his book on this anti-white racism has a lot of emphasis on immigration as well, that we're bringing in people who feel that the founding, or they're inculcated with that by the DEI lobby, that they don't like the majority population. And they think that they can, and he had some fascinating data about people who 10 or 20 years ago would have identified with their majority lineage. And what he meant by that is if somebody's one quarter Native American or 1/16 African American or 1/4 and the rest white, they would have said they were white. And they don't, because they're ashamed of it, or they feel it brings no dividends of special preferences. So it was very fascinating. I urge everybody to listen to it. But what they're doing, and I don't like to say that this is good, I think it's going to be bad and it should be avoided. They're going to create a majority population anger. And when you saw that UCLA woman, that Middle Eastern woman, said to that, I think it was a Jewish student, you said, "You're white. We don't like whites here at UCLA." And that's another subtext of all of these protests. The Jewish community is called white settlers, white settlers. They keep saying that. And they're demonized, and as if the Holocaust or their history of persecution doesn't matter. They're just white. And if you're white, you can say anything about anybody. And that's what they do. And I think we're really going to have to speak up, everybody, and say, you know what? If somebody in the DEI community starts collectivizing, demonizing people by their skin color, whether it's Jewish or white or Latino, whatever it is, you're going to have to call them out as a racist. And this is what is so baffling about this campus protest, because it's not that these are neutral institutions, Jack, that are allowing this anti-Semitic hate speech. They, of all the institutions, the corporation, the foundation, K-12, entertainment, sports, they are the ones that suppress free expression and call it hate speech. So if you had substituted any other group, Native Americans, Black, gay, transgender, for Jewish, they would have not just sanctioned, not just suspended, they would have expelled that student. Right. And they know it. They know it. And they know it now. And that's one of the subtexts of why they don't do anything, because they're terrified.
Yeah.
They're terrified they'll lose what they've spent their whole life doing and making compromises and appeasing to get where they are. And they don't want to lose it. And they'll lose it because the lunatics which are a minority, the students are in charge of their asylum.
You know, Victor, I wonder if some enterprising conservative organization would start a database of all these jackasses who've been arrested or spotted. You know, you could tell anyone who was near the Capitol on January 6th, 2021, right? All these videos or whatever that our government has used to pinpoint every single individual who was around that place. If the same kind of technology was applied to these campuses and a database collected of these, here are all the jackasses who participated, that would follow them for their lives. I would strongly encourage and hope somebody would be up.
They won't. I was talking to a student not too long ago at Stanford, and they pointed out that these people wearing masks and umbrellas, you know, and I notice they hold up their shawls in front of them. They're afraid of these AI cameras, these facial recognition, because they know that if the university wanted to, they could run all of those thousands of hours of videos through computers and find out who these people are, cross-check it with their directories the way they did on January 6th. But basically, the message that we're getting, and this demonstration follows very closely the 120 days of riot and mayhem and arson of 2020 that took place with impunity. It's just the It's the bastard child of that parent. And they know that nothing happened to the 14,000 that were arrested. So they think that nothing's going to happen to them. And that allows them to destroy things. You know, it's really weird. There's, when you look at some of the Zoom picture, I mean, the drone photographs of UCLA and USC as well. And then you look at these, did you see the, I think it was at UCLA or USC, where Hamas is teaching people how to have combat, personal combat, like a Hamas training camp. They've all got masks on and they're in a circle and somebody's supposedly demonstrating martial arts. So these are not universities anymore, everybody. These are training camps to teach people to be violent and to be hateful and to hate Jews and to take over and destroy things. This isn't even the 1968, I don't want to go to Vietnam protest. This is pro-Hezbollah, pro-Hamas, pro-Iran, with a bunch of useful idiots that want to protest. And they have taken the university and turned it into a hateful, anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish, radical, I don't know, terrorist-supporting institution. And they let them do it. I just can't understand how people would go into a hollowed Hamilton Hall. I've been by Columbia. That was the classics department. They take hammers and break in, and then they go in and they destroy things. They took furniture and destroy, and nobody does anything. And then the poor maintenance staff has to go and clean that up, and those poor policemen have to balance themselves as they're kind of going that ladder.
Well,
this is a class thing. The Joe Biden Democratic Party and the Obama Biden Democratic Party is a class of very, very wealthy people and very poor people. But it's not a class of the middle class or the lower middle class or the upper middle class. It's not. And
there's someone else who needs to be raised about Columbia and about things in general is Barack Obama. And let's get your thoughts on him and what he's wrought right after these final important messages.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. I mentioned at the outset about Victor's website. We have new listeners. You may not know about it. It's victorhanson.com is the address. The title of the site is The Blade of Perseus. I encourage you to go and go frequently. You will find links to everything Victor writes, American Greatness, his syndicated column, links to his appearances, links to these podcasts, and his Victor's appearances on other podcasts. Ultra articles. Those are the pieces Victor writes exclusively for The Blade of Perseus. To read them, you should subscribe. It's $5 to get in the door, $50 discounted for the full year. VictorHanson.com. And if you're on X, I almost said Twitter. I'm going to get some angry mail if I say that. Victor's handle is at VD Hanson, and he writes essentially a column or two every week now. They're more like rants, but they're good rants, Victor. They're column-y rants. And he does that on X at VD Hanson. So, Victor, Barack Obama, I checked the other night, and gosh, he was nowhere to be seen on social media. All the hell breaking loose at Colombia. That was the main focus for all this nonsense for a few days. Barack Obama was quiet. I have two questions, Victor, or two things to ask you to address. One is, any thoughts on where Barry was hiding? And then the other larger question is it fair to say, to describe this, what's going on right now, is that we are living in Barack Obama's America?
We are. Well, I don't know where Barack is. Let's go through the alternatives. He could be at his $14 million, which probably was a cheap price. Is it 20 or 40 acres on Martha's Vineyard, his estate?
Right.
Or he could be in his $9 million Kalorama, Washington digs. Or he could be in his very expensive old Chicago beautiful home. Or he could be on the beach at his new multi-million dollar beachside Hawaii home. It has to be one of his four estates. And I don't know which one it is. It depends, I guess, where he's most bored. But what would he's so irrelevant now. If he came on campus as the community organizer, what would he say?
I just want to tell you that we're going to, I support you. I have free speech, but we won't condone violence. They would just laugh him out. Or he could say, well, you know, I was a good friend of Rashid Khalidi, and I was attacked for that. Or Bill Ayers, he's out there. He's back in there. He's a good friend of mine. He helped me write. What could he say? They would laugh him out. He's a joke. Did he start this? Yes. He did it in a variety of ways. He did it abroad because he cooked up this, Iran is not that bad. The real bad people are the Saudis and the Sunnis and these corrupt monarchies and these dictatorships in Egypt. We're going to make sure we can get rid of Mubarak and get the Muslim Brotherhood. And we're not going to talk to the Saudis. And we're going to really promote Hamas and Hezbollah. And we're going to have an Iran deal. And we're going to say the Houthis are good. And that's what he did. And the idea was to play off the Iranians versus our allies and Israel. He hated Israel. He hated Israel. That's what he did abroad. At home, and people forget that when people were talking about race, they were talking about the first black president might be Colin Powell or some moderate, sensible person where race would be indifferent or would be irrelevant, not essential. And then he came along and he gave that misleading speech. There is no red state. There is no blue state. There's only, that was a complete lie at the 2004 Democratic Convention. And he came out of nowhere and he just captified the left. They thought, we want to really feel, we want a virtue signal and show that we're not guilty and we can elect a black person. And he, that was the type of black person they liked. It wasn't a Clarence Thomas person who grew up in poverty and in the South and had faced Jim Crow and was dark. They wanted somebody that was half white, articulate, as Joe Biden said, and because they're basically racist. Joe Biden said he's the first black candidate. Not true, by the way. Shirley Chisholm was brilliant. And Barbara Jordan was really smart. But he said first articulate black presidential candidate among them. A large repertoire that Biden has compiled of racist statements. But yeah, he started it. And he started it with, think of what he said in the campaign. You know, my grandmother sees a black person walking down the street and she clicks her door. She's racist. And Michelle said this, I've never been proud of my country. And then she said, they always raise the bar on us. Then she said, it's a downright mean country. And then it went into the beer summit when he libeled the police. And then there was Trayvon Martin was a son that he never had because he was black. And then there was Michelle said that people are racist because a short white woman asked her to reach for a package at Target. And that was what it was. It was all that. And Valerie Jarrett, she loved Iran. She had grown up there. And this was, they started the whole idea that the Israelis were the white post-colonialist, neo-colonialist settler, oppressive
population. They hated Netanyahu, and so that they gave it, all these, they gave us Robert Malley, they gave us Jake Sullivan, they gave us Blink. All these people came up through the Obama ranks. So yeah, he did it abroad and he did it at home, and that was what a community. How did he cut his teeth, Jack, in Chicago, swarming the homes of bank people? That was the old community. Obama was a community organizer. They would go to officials' home, and that's what they did with the Supreme Court. That, I mean, that was the same idea that they've unleashed against the justices' home. And these people, yeah, he started it, and his people. I mean, Biden. Let's be honest. Biden was a bumbling, incompetent, plagiarist, miscreant liar. And everybody thought in his defense, he had two major brain operations and he lost his wife and a child. And that was tragic, but he was not considered he made his name by being a border state, his word, not me. I'm a border state people where we had slavery. And he kissed up to Eastland, and he kissed up to Strom Thurmond, and he kissed up to Robert Byrd, gave postmortem eulogies for them.
Right.
And then he's compiled that, you know, you ain't black, you're a junkie, the corn pop saga. Hey boy, he's called his own, he's a racist, he always was. But he's surrounded by the Obama people. And so, yeah, they've done a lot of damage. If Obama hadn't been elected, I think John McCain, whom I wasn't a big fan of but voted for, and Mitt Romney, who I was not a big fan of, would have, you know, they would have been for integration, assimilation, and we would have seen where we were headed, where people were getting over race. And now it's just in our face. And they, right. when prior to Barack Obama, Al Sharpton was seen as a demagogue with blood on his hands that shook down corporations. And Obama said, you know, Jesse Jackson insulted me. Didn't he say in a hot mic, I want to cut off his blank blank to Obama? I think they did on an interview. And
so.
he empowered Sharpton. Sharpton was at the White House all the time.
And Tawana Brawley and all the other.
He was rehabilitated. Suddenly you saw this pariah that was, you know, shoulder to shoulder with the Clintons, and he was taking pictures with Obama. Obama had a picture of Farrakhan, and they suppressed it during, it only came out after he was gone. He liked Farrakhan.
Stanley, who's the guy who wrote about that?
Yeah, I mean, the answer is yes, he started it. And he started, what he did was, to in a nutshell, he took an old binary that there was 11 or 10 or 11% black, and there was at one time 90% white, and now that had changed. It was about 70% white, at least people who claim to be white, and there was another 10% Latino in those days, and Asian, et cetera. And then he lumped them all together. And he was the first president that started using the word diversity nonstop. Diverse, 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 diversity. And he was the first president under that we got the DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion. And what he said was, we have a powerful force. If we can demonize white people and say, if you're not white, it doesn't matter if you're black, it's called intersectionality. You're all oppressed. You're all victimized. So that's what he did. And, you know, when Juicy Smollett was concocting that farce, he had people communicating with Michelle Obama.
Right.
So
why wasn't he the son? Why wasn't Juicy the son that Obama never
had? I don't
had?
Know. Juicy did a lot of things. He taught us that if you prance around Chicago in a very left-wing neighborhood, primarily minority, at 2 a.m. to go get a Subway sandwich, you're going to encounter people looking for Juicy because they don't like Empire, and they watch it, and they do not like the black actor. So they're going to, white toughs with MAGA hats are going to come out equipped with rope, and they're going to attack you. in bleach, and they're going to attack you, and they're going to make you, as an acrobat, hold your cell phone in one hand, hold your Subway sandwich in the other, and then fight them off. And they're going to insult you. They're going to say F Empire. And they're going to throw bleach at you because they want to bleach you white, apparently. And it's going to defy the laws of chemistry, because even though it's a wind chill factor of 30 below, well below the freezing level of bleach, bleach is not going to freeze because these are so diabolical, MAGA, red-hatted people. And by the way, if there's a lie that two large African people from Africa that are close associates of Juicy and were his trainers are seen on a video buying MAGA hats and rope and bleach, that has and they have a check from Juicy, that has nothing to do. And now I'm quoting what we heard from Nancy Pelosi, Kamala Harris, and the Black Caucus. That's what they wanted us to believe about Juicy.
Victor, I think in your past life you had to be a stand-up. That was pretty.
I gave that talk at the Reagan. I gave that talk at the Reagan Library. It was funny. This is what you would have to do to believe Juicy, and they did believe him.
Right. Oh, hey, Victor. We got time. If I could just ask you a quick thing, because we have to wrap it up. You're going to Normandy. You mentioned it earlier, and you've been. I know you've been there any number of times, but. And you're taking a lot of people with you. But I'm curious, I think our listeners may be too, if you weren't leading a group and you just had the luxury of going to one place in Normandy as a military historian, as somebody, you know, interested in a particular military spot, and not the cemetery, which is just the most hallowed place, I think. Where would you want to go? Where, what place in Normandy interests you as a military historian?
Well, as a military historian, two
whatever
beaches.
Whatever you want. Yeah.
People should remember one thing about the Normandy beaches, and that is that the three Canadian and British Sword, Gold, and Juno. There was very little problem. They went like clockwork. Their problem was that Montgomery couldn't take Caen, and Caen was the network, the transportation hub, and he gave precious time, like 3 days, for the SS Panzer Das Reich, I think, or Panzer Lehr, to come in and occupy it, and that took them 2 months. Utah was not bad. The Americans got on Utah pretty well. Omaha was an ungodly disaster. 90% of the deaths were on one beach, and that was because they overshot the landing. They let the people out too soon. There was a seawall they didn't, and there was the bocage, greater bocage there than elsewhere. So there's something about Omaha that when you walk there, it's really eerie because they should not have been able to take that beach. They were just sitting ducks, and they did. And that famous, you know, Teddy Roosevelt's son was there. Right. And there was, you know, that famous colonel said there's only two types of people on this beach. And there's only two types, the types that stay and die and the types that get off and live. And yep. they did. And so I've always, I mean, there's some beautiful seaside places, Cherbourg out on the peninsula, the Cotentin Peninsula, and there's the Brittany Peninsula. Those are beautiful places. And I was on the American Battlefield Commission. So I spent a couple visits at the Normandy cemetery. And by the way, there's about 30 cemeteries there in Tunisia, Italy, Mexico, everywhere, Philippines, Hawaii. Right. Yeah. And that one, because of Saving Private Ryan, think of that. That one cemetery gets more people than all the other military cemeteries in the world, U.S. cemeteries of the dead. And another thing that's really interesting is, you know what the second one is of all U.S. cemeteries abroad? And half of all the people who died abroad in combat or for any reason, or married, are buried in U.S. cemeteries. The other half, their families chose to be shipped home. But it's a cemetery at Ham in Belgium, and that's because George Patton is there.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's and you know, if you mentioned, if you want, I didn't want to just, you know, I didn't want to just say that about the cemetery. If you want to go there, the best place, I think, to get, I mean, it's a little bit distancy, but there is a beautiful city, Cobourg, and it's got the, one of the most famous hotels in France, the Grand Hotel, and it's right on the beach. And I think I don't know if the little town might be Baalbec. I'm doing this from memory, but it's got that French, you know, that French chateau look, the Grand Hotel. It's got the black roof, and I think it's it's four stories. It's got a big, beautiful lawn, and it's just got miles of beaches, of the Normandy beaches. It's very hard to go there. And, you know, Proust, you know, Remembrance of Things Past, I'm doing this by memory, but I think from 6 or to 1914, the 14, right before the first year of the war, that's where he wrote, right there at the, yep, at the hotel.
Your memory is, as you're talking, I'm looking it up, and your memory is perfect, Victor.
Yeah. Well, it's a beautiful hotel, and it's very hard to get reservations. We couldn't get reservations. The last time I took a group, we did, and and it was very hard to get in the Trianon Hotel at Versailles, where the Versailles Treaty was signed. But I'm going to take a group there, where in the room where they signed the Versailles Treaty. I'm also going to go to a chateau, I won't want to disclose it, where Rommel stayed and organized the resistance, at least for the first 3 weeks. And then we're booked to go into the Notre Dame Cathedral and see the ongoing reconstruction. So we have a lot of really good things that we're doing. And then I have three Hillsdale history professors, Mark Kalkoff and Ken Calvert and Tom Connor, and they're all versed in Normandy. It's history from the medieval period. So we're going to go to Rouen and look at some, you know, medieval stuff, cathedrals. Sure. And then Tom Connor's
Burned at the stake there.
That's where she was burned at the stake. And he's an expert on D-Day. He's going to give some lectures. I'm going to give one on Patton and his role there, and then the difference between the various beaches. And everybody has to remember that we were way behind. They had that schedule, you know, D-Day plus one, two, where, and then they calibrated by miles. And the campaign was the Normandy campaign was to end in Paris. But for the first 60 days, we were not making the D-Day plus three, you know, 7 miles D-Day. We were way behind. And then Operation Cobra, we used heavy horizontal bombers, B-17s and 24s, and we just bombed an entire panzer division, and we broke out. And then they turned on July 31st, August 1st, Third Army became operational, and Patton was off to the races, the Falaise Gap, and then they took Paris in mid-August, and they got way ahead of the schedule. And so the Normandy campaign was basically June 6th to August 17th.
Well,
when Paris fell.
We need to talk on our next episode about Operation Market Garden and some news come out recently about British spies helping Hitler. But
I've been reading about that. Yeah. It's very depressing because a lot of very brave American and British paratroopers got killed, and they were parachuted right on waiting Panzer Division.
Well, we'll thank British spy for that. We'll get your fuller thoughts when we have our next podcast. And Victor, I want, as we wrap this up, we thank our listeners for doing that. And if you're a new listener, thanks. Come back. If you're interested in prior podcasts, go to The Blade of Perseus, and there's the archives. You'll find them there. Myself, Sammy Wink, and Victor now doing a lot of interviewing with people. So lots of people leave comments on Apple, you can do it and rate the show 0 to 5 stars. Victor's 4.9 plus rating. It would be a perfect 5, but the host Fowler takes the score down. And we read the comments, and here's one, and it's titled From Occupied Upstate New York. I've been following the professor's writings and some of his presentations on military matters for years. Only recently discovered his podcast and have been listening to his back catalog. Always incisive, on point, and common sense. If Trump is half as smart as I think he is, he'll offer Victor a cabinet position, preferably state or defense, respectfully. This is from Frank Dobig. So
was it Clint Eastwood that said a man's got to know his limitations? And you know, and was it Nietzsche said that everything will come to a man if he just wait? Well, I'm not that man. It's everything's going to come to if he just waits. I'm the man that knows his limitations. I would be a lousy politician or a bureaucrat, and I'm not making fun of them. They have to have enormous endurance, but I could tell you that I have a lot of family members that would come out of the woodwork and say this man is unqualified.
Oh, that would, what hearings they would be.
Oh my God. He's a renegade right-wing nut and from a long liberal tradition, they would say. And even though I think my parents were pretty conservative Democrat.
Well, you know who they'd be voting for. Hey, Victor, you've been terrific. Thanks for all the wisdom you shared today. Folks, if you haven't ordered Victor's book, The End of Everything, go out and do it. We'll be back soon with another episode. Oh, wait, I forgot to say. Wait a minute. Civil Thoughts. That's what I do every week. Go to civilthoughts.com. Sign up for my free weekly email newsletter. Okay, thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back soon with another episode of The Victor Davis Hanson Show. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.